Hey everybody, and welcome to the Love Song Book Club podcast. This is our final episode for the Love Song segment, so we're covering the last four songs there. We're covering Kōri Doke, Oe Nai Tsubasa, Soshite Monogatari ga Owaru, and Love Song. And here joining me this week, we have myself, Spidey, joined by Biscuito.
Hey, what's good?
Dongo Daikazuku.
Hello.
Pepe.
Howdy, how?
It's your first Love Song podcast, I believe.
Apparently it is, yeah.
And of course we have Pi.
Good to be back.
Yeah.
Sweet. We got quite a big cast lineup for this one, so I'm hoping some awesome discussion happening and like kind of wrapping everything up before we move on to Owaru no Hoshi no Love Song. Before we get too into it, I feel like we should mention that there's some interesting news about Love Song that's come up in the last few days.
This is funny.
Yeah.
This is a very funny story.
I actually found out about it today because Biz told me Maeda and Baba were tweeting about Love Song. So if you notice, Love Song was sold out on Amazon and people were thinking, oh, I wonder why. Apparently on February 17, Maeda tweeted that we're going to stop the physical production of Love Song. So if you want to get the brand new copy of the physical album, you have to buy it now. And the next day, well, it, let's just say it jumped from 2,600 to rank 3 on Amazon.
Wow.
Boom.
So by complete coincidence, I mean, because of the popularity of the Love Song book podcasts, people are flocking to the stores to pick up this album. Which is just great news. Good job, guys. Pat yourselves on the back.
Awesome, we did it, guy.
It also explains why Maeda was tweeting like the samples of some of the Love Song songs.
Yeah, which is just really cool. Just a cool coincidence.
And, yeah, definitely good timing.
I guess we say that to say this, and that, like, obviously, I think you said March 7th is when there's going to be more on Amazon to purchase.
Yeah, they're going to be restocking, fortunately.
Yeah, they're going to be restocking them. And, you know, we say that to say this, that now that you've listened to all of these wonderful podcasts and listened to this super good album, if you want to purchase a physical copy of this album, you don't have a better chance now, because it might be your only chance. Mm-hmm. So if you want this whenever they restock, you probably should go ahead and get it, because it's very clearly getting to this point where they might not be making anymore, so you might want to try to pick one up.
You might have to fight someone for it, but hey.
Yeah, so that's very interesting. I'm definitely hoping to tweet Maeda about this book club soon. Hopefully he'll notice us. That'd be cool.
So he can judge us for all of our horribly wrong interpretations of the music.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
Well then, let's jump into some horrible interpretations of Kōri Doke.
Sounds good to me.
So who wants to talk about clocks for a second?
Don't you mean pendulum clocks, Biz?
Let's talk about pendulum clocks. So,
boy.
First of all, this song is I feel like I've said this so many times, but this song's really good.
It is amazing. Absolutely.
Especially, like production-wise. Like, I don't know if they went to, like, some special booth or something for this one, but this song specifically just sounds so much more professional to me than, like, most of them. Like, this song sounds good. And I don't know why that is, but, like, the mixing or something on here is just...
Yeah, it definitely sounds a lot less synthesized than most of the other
drum
songs.
Track on this song is ridiculously crisp. Like, it's really nice and poppy. I really like it. It feels like somebody's actually, you know, laying into some drums. It doesn't sound like a drum track at all.
It was arranged by someone named Moresis, and I don't think I've seen his name pop up in Love Song, the other songs, or anywhere else before, so I have no idea.
Yeah, definitely the drum track on this song, the thing that I really like about it is that it has a lot of fills. And a lot of the other songs don't really have fills to move into stuff. They just sort of like, oh, it's a beat, and you know, you'll hear actual drummers play just straight beats sometime and not do any fills, but this song really does a lot of beats a lot of fills to move from like one phrase to another phrase. And yeah, it's just, it makes the song feel really tight and a lot more organic, I guess.
Yeah, and what we're saying about that is, like, kind of like it's you know, your boom pat boom pat, but then it'll like do a little boom boom, like it'll, there's something else there, and that something is going to be something different every time. Like, it's definitely the musician doing what they want to do, and
yeah,
it's a nice touch.
You know,
oh, it's just the same arranger of Shinwa, okay.
Oh, okay. Shinwa is also very good, in my opinion.
One thing I really, really love about Koridoke is the way that the lyrics blend so well with the music. Like, if you notice, every time that the singer, like, wind the clock, or, even so we are winding the screw of tomorrow, every time that line comes up, the song has this change to it. It's all perfectly placed. It's all so symbolic.
I really like the kind of cyclical, or not cyclical, but like the repetition in the song is super good, where like each new phrase is something that she'll repeat twice,
mm-hmm.
Or repeat at least once, which is cool because it's kind of, this is definitely like this constant feeling of a clock with this song, which is actually why I wanted to talk about Pendulum Clocks, but we'll get to that in a second. Pai, go ahead and say what you were going to say.
Well, I think the thing that I'm most like impressed by with this song is how different each one of the like sections of the song feels. A lot of times with songs on this album, I feel like you see things repeated pretty often. And with Ice Clock, what seems to happen is that you have a break, then you have, you know, a little bit more going on, then you have another break, then you have more going on. But each one of those breaks is unique. It's not just like the same fill or the same sort of texture to it. It's just every time it feels just a little bit different, but it mm-hmm. maintains that sense that something's going on.
It's like the way it changes, I feel, is also like representative of the song. Like, there are times when it changes to become suddenly very flourished and very alive, and then suddenly it changes to become very subdued, and I feel that when that happens, the lyrics of the song really somehow match the feel of how it's changing.
Yeah, they definitely stand out then. And it's a good way to bring the focus back to the lyrics, because you have a tendency to, like, when there's so much going on with the music, you'll focus on the music, and then, you know, it stops, you hear, you know, your little break for a bit, and then the voice comes back in, and you focus on those lyrics. I think it gives them a lot more strength. I think my favorite part of the song is that there's, like, this whistling piece that goes like ba da 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 da, and it trails out on that. And the thing that I can't think of any better way to end this song, because that has a lot of drive to it, because it leads directly into the next phrase. You know, it's, you know, ba da 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 da. Da 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 da, like you have to mm-hmm. move into something after that. And so by fading out, they kind of maintain that sense of drive, that sense of momentum in the song. Instead of
keep on taking.
Yeah, instead of just like stopping it on something, or, you know, pulling some chord out of nowhere. There's all sorts of different endings on this album that they play around with. And I think fades are usually overused. Like, I sometimes feel like, oh, a fade is what you use to end a song if you can't think of any good way to end a song. But in this case, it felt appropriate. It didn't feel like a cop-out.
There's a lot of like really cool like kind of sharp endings on the album. There's kind of distortions in there. You have transitions, like where one track ends and it fades right into another song, like naturally.
Mm-hmm.
It's very well done across the whole album, really. Like, it makes listening to the entire album in one sitting a treat.
Yeah, for sure.
Biz, your mention of Pendulum Clocks actually depressed me a little.
Why is that?
Because I was so sure that the clock in this song, this is something Q also brought up, had something to do with the clock in track one, but there's nothing in track one to indicate that that's a pendulum clock.
Oh, the watch or whatever.
Yeah.
It is a watch. I don't know what the clock is here in this song. I feel like the references to a clock is obviously like there's kind of this constant referral to time in this track. There's definitely a passage of time here where which is obviously just a repeated theme throughout the album. The reason I actually mentioned pendulum clocks is because this song starts, whenever it like starts to pick up, there's just this like ticking.
Yes.
That actually starts very soon in the song before most of the instruments actually kick in. Like it's probably just like tapping the side of a snare drum or something. I'm not really sure what it is, but it's just kind of a tick, right? And it's at a perfect 120 beats per minute, which if you know anything about pendulum clocks, it does the tick tock tick tock, because for every second it's going to tick twice, right, as it's swinging back and forth. And the coolest part about it is like the whole song is going to keep that beat, so the whole song is like just going to be paced like a clock, right? Like the entire time that the music is present. And whenever it actually like it transitions from just kind of the lyrics and kind of a soft track over into the drum track, which just kind of like fills in, like even when the drums first come in, it like does this like ba-ba-da-da-da, and then like it comes in and that drum track like takes up right where that ticking leaves off, and it like keeps that beat going through the whole song. And it's really cool to like just pull up like 120 BPM metronome and listen to it with the song, just be like, yep, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah,
really brilliant.
I know that like as a musician, I have a few songs that I can remember like how they sound, and I can keep that tempo very solid in my mind. And I actually use that to like time stuff. Like Stars and Stripes Forever is also at 120 beats per minute. And so, you know, whenever I'm trying to figure out how to time something, I'm like, okay, well, let's see, what's Stars and Stripes? Ba 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 da ba. And
yep.
Yeah, I just do the same. You can do the same thing with this song. So if you're looking for a song that you can set your watch to, you can like
you can,
listen to this song
a
thousand times.
Make sure that
times.
Your watch is accurate. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. That was like, I don't know, that whole thing was one thing that I was really hoping somebody somewhere would pick up on, because I was just like, oh my god, it's a clock. Like, yeah, I really like that.
I did not know that.
So do you want to talk about the lyrics a bit?
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about what the hell is this song about? So
all I can say really is that it feels nice.
You think this song feels nice? Okay.
It does feel nice to me. Feels like the first steps towards moving on with his life, basically.
I thought it was very futile. I don't know.
Oh yeah,
there is a lot of self-loathing in these lyrics.
Because my take on it was that he keeps winding the clock. He keeps continuing forward, even though that he knows that bad things will happen. It's a very pessimistic view. It's like, he'll just keep going, and I know bad things are gonna happen, but I'll just keep going because bad things are gonna happen.
Yeah.
He doesn't say why he keeps going.
The first stanza, like, the very first bit of the song, which, I mean, the song is really, it's like three stanzas, because it's just, like, this gigantic block.
Oh.
The beginning of the song, it says, like, he's talking about how he's like, the next time I'm gonna wake up, it's gonna be a warm morning. So it's kind of like the protagonist is saying that, like, he's just gonna wait for a good day, and until then he's just gonna not do anything, right? Which is kind of the feeling that I got about it. And he's like, no matter what kind of day it's gonna be, I'm gonna wait until I get that warm morning again. Like, I'm just gonna sit here and wait. But then he says, I have weakness where others don't. And so he's like kind of realizing that there's a futility in him sitting there and waiting. Like, there's no point. Like, you might as well just get up and do something, right? So I feel like he kind of, I don't think it's necessarily a reconciliation, but rather just kind of an inevitability where he's just like, ugh, I guess I gotta get up and go like eat food or something, right?
No, but you gotta think about this in a different light, because up until now, it's really like been him in denial over everything that's happened. But this is the song which really marks that transition of accepting that, oh, I am kind of broken and this is kind of messed up, but time is still moving. Like, the whole feel I got from this song, especially from the title, is time has stopped, but it is beginning to move again. He's beginning to think of the future. He's beginning to have hope for the future. And that's why the song feels
hopeful.
So good.
I think it is hopeful. I think
someday we will see a sunny dream, you know?
That's... Well, I guess that happens.
There's hopefulness, but then there's, like, what's the basis of it, right?
Time.
He's gone through a lot of shit.
Time heals everything.
Time will heal all wounds, you know?
But will so, it?
I think it's a very real thing, because when people get depressed, when bad things happen to someone, and they just don't want to do anything with the world, time doesn't care. Time keeps going. And... You have these people will have a very pessimistic view of it. Like, why should I just continue? Why should anything continue? Because there's no meaning to it. But time doesn't care. It'll just keep going. So people will either just sit there and wait.
Time is unforgiving.
Yeah. Or they'll continue knowing that bad things will happen. And that's what I mean when I say it's pessimistic. They'll continue knowing that bad things will happen. But the important thing is that they will still continue. And I think that might be the message that I took from it. Even if you know bad things are going to happen, that's no excuse to just stop and do nothing.
Isn't that a hurtful message?
I feel like the protagonist is... I feel like he's forward-thinking here, and I feel like he's trying to think ahead and like trying to think of, oh, well, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, but... Because you think one way, it doesn't necessarily mean that you feel a certain way, right? So I feel like while he's thinking forward, I feel like his heart is stuck where his heart is, like regardless of what he perceives of time.
His heart is stuck in the time where painful things happen, and thus his
he's
heart
saying,
only
like,
expects
in the end, I'm weak and everyone else is better at this, so I guess I just should go ahead and get up and do my shit, right?
Yep.
I think that's a really nice message. I don't know.
Nice message. It sounds very pessimistic.
I mean,
in my opinion,
it's melancholy.
I mean, like, okay, I have to get up and go to work every day. It doesn't necessarily mean I like it. My heart isn't with where my work is, but it's part of the status quo. So I'm just getting into my shoes each day and running through the motions. That doesn't mean it's a good thing at all.
But you should be congratulated
get
for
up and become
getting up
a functioning
every day.
Member of society yes. and actually I do think... things. It does not mean that you're actually having a good time or that you're in a good place mentally.
It doesn't mean he has to be in a good time to have hope.
Yeah.
He's obvious. This is showing growth. Like, he is improving. He is growing as a person to be able to acknowledge his faults in himself and see where he's going. And, like, being able to get up every day. That's a good thing. And it shows him tremendous growth of his character.
I get what Aspie is saying, because there's so many people who are affected by depression or affected by post-traumatic stress that just can't seem to get up and go to work, even they can't even do this whole thing where they have to get up and leave their heart outside of work. They just
Okay, so let's start looking at some specific lines to explain why I feel like even though. The wrapping of this song is very much something that you can perceive as something that is like a forward-thinking, positive message, right? And that, hey, life sucks, but you gotta keep moving, right? Like, okay, gotcha. Mm. We're on the same page there.
Yeah.
But, so first of all, starts off by saying he's weak, right? That's the first thing he says. And because he realizes that, he's done with it and he's going to get up, right? So he's saying, oh, I'm not going to be weak or something, right? So he goes on, winding the screw of tomorrow, blah, 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 blah. Talks about how one day we saw the dream because he said he saw the accumulating dream, but then he says, even if, just if, it only creates nothing but sad memories, right? And I can't do anything but... to create more memories to embellish them is the word that is used. And embellish isn't necessarily a positive term because what that ends up reading as is he's saying that, okay, so I'm in this situation where basically nothing is going to be as good as the dream that I had. And all I can do is try to get more memories to try to cover up this bad thing. And nothing's ever going to be as good. Okay.
Sure.
That's what it sounds like. It's like, okay, I'm going to fill my schedule with stuff to then not have to look into the face of the thing that wasn't, right?
I guess. I don't know. I tend to side more with Aspie on this one. I do think that it's a pretty hopeful song. It's, you know, the sort of thing where I kind of imagine it as time is almost standing still for the main character at this point. Like, he's looking forward at, you know, time moving on in an almost detached sort of way. Like, it's like, okay, you know,
it feels a lot like he is stuck while everything is moving past him, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, someday he'll catch up. You know, someday the flow of time is going to carry him, and he says, like, you know what, we're going to look up to the clouds again, and, you know, everything someday will be sunny. And I tend to agree. I think that it's a good sense of sort of what depression is at that moment of catharsis, if that makes sense, where it's not necessarily that you're feeling good. It's that you recognize that this too shall pass.
I mean, he does say that someday he'll realize how ridiculous he is, because he is currently being ridiculous, right? Because he is still in a rut. But then he says, deep inside, my heart still hurts, right?
Yeah. It's that sense of, I'm feeling miserable, I recognize it, and not only do I recognize it, I recognize that this isn't forever, and someday I'm going to look back on this and not even be able to, understand why I felt this way. And that's honestly true. I think, as somebody who's gone through that sort of thing, I can look back
at songs.
Yeah, I can look back at moments like that in my life where I think, not only, just, oh man, I wish I hadn't felt that way, but just man, I can't even relate to myself at that point in my life.
I think you're right. I don't disagree with you. I think that that he is definitely coming to terms with something, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like in this point of time, we're trying to get back to the first track in the album, right? Where he's, looking at things kind of in a neutral state, where he's like, all right, time to start looking back at all these memories, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the memories are important. But the question is both he's coming to terms with his past, and he's asking questions about the future, but the question is what is that future for him? And I feel like that's a question that he doesn't have an answer to.
True, but maybe we'll
I feel like he's coming to the realization that his life now is never going to be as good as it would have been, and he's asking that question. He's posing that question and thinking, okay, in reality, most people would see and view it this way, and I'm going to think about it that way, but that's not where my heart is.
I initially felt that this was more negative because there is a lot of self-loathing and self-ridicule in the song, especially in the first half. But as you guys discussed, a few key lyrics started to pop into my head as really thinking that he's just cynical at this point. He recognizes that he was a flawed person. He needed her to help him stay on his 2 feet. But then we have sentiments such as this: but we were, even so, we are facing forward. Someday will be sunny, someday will be sunny. The latter part, one of you already quoted. But it does feel like you said, he's starting to look forward. Though, I am a bit curious. Very late in the song, when time almost seems to start to move again, you have the bus runs across the road and time passed. The next couple of lines says, looking down to the stars of the frozen sky, I already went too far. And that got, in my discussion on the forum, I expressed, just not knowing what the reference to color after that meant, and how the statement about her laughing at him in the rain really connected to the earlier sentiments.
That's an important line. Yep. And I was going to get to that next.
Well, guys, we need to move on.
Yeah, I was going to say, we spent half an hour on this song.
Look,
well, not quite, but still.
The point, it's been 20 minutes. Yeah. The point being, I feel like here's just my trying to put myself in the situation of what the hell is this character doing, right? What is he doing in his world right now? and it doesn't sound like a whole lot. He's getting up, and he is being, right? He's living day to day, he's existing, but we don't know where he's going or what he's doing, and every single day is a gray, cold day. It's rainy, lots of negative terminology, and he's saying in his mind, with a hopefulness, where's that sunny day? Where's that sunny day? I know it's going to be there somewhere. One day I'm going to see it. But what is it and when is it is a question. And we don't get there. We never get there in that song. And like the view that I see in the song is I picture, you know, you have the illustration there where he's like clearly sitting at a bus stop, right? And he's just kind of sitting there, right? And I get this idea that he's like getting up every day and he's like going on this trip. I don't know what it is or where it is. But he's sitting there at the bus stop and he's looking down into a puddle, right? He's looking down into a puddle because it's been raining, and he's looking at the reflection in the puddle of the stars, right? And he's looking at the stars in a frozen sky, and then the bus comes by and it kind of snaps him back to reality, right? So it's kind of like the guy by the roadside when the car drives by and splashes water on him, basically. And he says, you know, I've already gone too far, which leaves to me saying that there's no sense in him changing his path in life because nothing else is going to be as good, as he had said previously. And then he comes to the end where he's talking about how people said that, like, I know there was a discussion about, like, he says, any color will match me in this world of mundane, like this mundane world. I have a vision of just a gray world where everything to him lacks any color. Nothing is bright. And he sits there being really ridiculous and says, you laughed at me, even though we know she's not there. You've laughed at me beaten by the freezing morning rain. You laughed at me because he's ridiculous. So it's like kind of, I don't know, man. It doesn't sound good to me.
We're having differences of interpretation here.
I think
we can't really reconcile.
I think TLDR is like, he's negative about it. He's pessimistic, but it could have been. Could have done so much worse.
There's a lot of terminology. There's a lot of terminology in here where he keeps saying we, but we know that he's alone because he still has that memory of her, right? And he's still hanging on to that, and he's using that as like, it's almost like, not necessarily self-gratification, but it's like kind of this weird connection that he's not going to be able to let go. Like, how is he going to be able to move on if he's still got this stuck and he's just applying every single thing that he does to being with this other person who he's no longer with?
I guess you could consider it a small victory, even as Aspirity point out at length that he's moving at all. I mean, it is kind of a phase, like...
Now... Sorry, I'm interrupting.
Nah, go ahead.
Well, I just want to point out one thing. We're talking about all this imagery of, like, rain and when's it going to be sunny, when's it going to be sunny. The end has him looking at a puddle and seeing the reflection of the stars. That seems to me that the rain has stopped and that in the morning the sun's going to rise again. Doesn't that seem hopeful?
It does, but it took him all of this negativity just to finally get there.
It's fucking, he lost a loved one. He's going to go through negativity.
I was wondering if he did lose a loved one. I kind of put myself in a place where I feel like it sounds to me like he's going to like a graveyard every day and like having meetings with the person. And so when he's saying we, he's talking about sitting there together with them and talking.
Oh, that's an interesting interpretation. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was feeling about it. Like, I feel like he's taking a bus trip over to a graveyard and he's sitting by their grave and talking with them about what's going on in his life. Like, that's definitely the feeling that I got with it, which is an attachment that isn't necessarily a bad one. People do that. The last line says, someday we're going to see
love
a sunny
hurts,
dream.
Man.
It doesn't say a sunny day. It says a sunny dream, which I think is also important.
That is interesting. Well,
because
nonetheless,
as we know,
we need to move on.
Reality.
Alright, sure.
It's a trance, you know, piece. It's got, like, you know, that sort of heavy beat on it. There's a lot of running scales, arpeggios. You know, it has
arpeggios.
A sense of, you know, speed to it, just because there's so much going on. You know, it's less about listening to any specific part of the song you know, as opposed to just sort of like losing yourself in the texture of it. You know, there's just so much going on, so many things happening that
that's
you
what
we
call a trance.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. You know, and you can I feel like the right way to listen to these sorts of songs is to, you know, drift from listening to one part to another. And you know, none of the parts are particularly interesting. And I know that some people think that this sort of music is actually kind of boring for that reason.
It makes me think of, it's not like interesting to listen to like the individual part, but it's more of a progressive thing where it's interesting to like listen to it move. Like it's, you like to listen to the progression and like kind of get lost in the movement.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's the sort of song where you can let your attention wander, and you know, you can, like I said, listen from part to part. And I know that Pepe listens to a lot of this kind of music, so give us your opinions on it. Does it stand up to some of the other trance that you like?
I'd say I like it more than the most trance, actually. It's a lot less repetitive, I think, than most of the other trance I've listened to. Because trance tracks are generally end up being like 7-8 minutes long. Whereas this one, the way it progresses is very intense. Because a lot of other trance progresses very gradually. Like after one measure, a beat comes in. After one measure, another melody comes in. And then they remove and so on. Here, there are times in which the song just suddenly drops. And then suddenly it's silent. Suddenly it comes back and yeah. It does start out with a very trance progression, but yeah, and I think that makes it more exciting, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the beat drops and that sort of thing kind of remind me more of house sometimes. Like, it's somewhere in between.
Progressive trance, I think, is the correct label if you want to put it on.
I'm a huge fan of the... I know Canon is as well. I'm a huge fan of like the actual like proper piano arpeggios that come like kind of just before the first break.
Yeah.
Before it does the bird flaps and then switches into the...
Yeah. I mean, before that it was doing a lot of scales, but you're right. Right that, around
yeah,
that part
that
is
piano
when the arpeggios
come crazy. And Canon basically wanted to pose the question to you, and I tried to answer it as best as I could. He wanted to say, basically, why do I like this song? and I had actually told him, I was like, from what I can tell, you have an affinity to arpeggios. So it was good for me to hear you say that, even though I wouldn't necessarily say it's like, it's, I guess, I don't really know for sure if it's really an exactly an arpeggio, because it definitely, it moves quite a bit. It kind of goes up and down as it scales, but... But yeah, it's cool to hear.
So what the hell is this song about, Dongo?
Well, Biz's timing on finishing up track 10 was actually really good, because he brought up the fact that he's probably looking into a puddle where he can see the stars.
Uh-huh.
And that indicates that the rain has stopped. And perhaps track 11 is the sunny dream he's talking about seeing.
Yeah.
Because you have this whole thing, and it doesn't have as much of the negativity and cynicism of 10.
Yes.
You have a lot of emotions flowing through him near the end, but that's not really related to the dream itself. That's just what's going on inside him as he's coming to a conclusion about how he feels and kind of confronting the issue of how do I legitimately move on from this? How do I go from this repetitive life where I just go through the motions, for lack of a better term, and move into actually having a life where I can live even without the one I cared for so much.
Right. This song is super cool lyrically because it doesn't really tell a story. It just kind of, it poses a ton of themes and a lot of like literal emotions that you have to kind of look at as they proceed and like try to see, try to think very deeply about like what are these it's kind of like thinking of like stages of denial, for example. Like, what are each of these emotions in this order and how are they changing and what does that mean? Like, it's kind of broken up and kind of manic in a way. But the song kind of starts where it says, so congratulations, Aspie, you are correct. the song says, by just a single flap, the paleness of the clouds dispersed. Right? So I guess we'll attribute this to, like, the girl in the sky is an angel, right? And she flaps her wings and the clouds disperse and the sky is open once again.
He's gotten over it.
Right? Yeah, he did it. Spoilers, I don't think he did.
And
he says, far away, you can see the mirage of a city in the sky, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he's talking about the stars. After the wing flap, right? And then it says, this is where it gets interesting. Where it says, over and over it turned hazy, swayed, and disappeared. I can no longer reach anywhere. What does that mean? You guys know what that means? He could see the mirage of the city in the sky, but then it turned hazy, it swayed, and it disappeared. And he can no longer reach anywhere.
I think the anywhere here might refer to, like, this dream. I think the fact that he's let go of the dream, him hanging on to the past, means that he can no longer reach to the past. I think it symbolizes him finally letting go. Because once you let go, you can't just, you know, can't immerse yourself once again and be negative about it all again. He's realized that he can't do that anymore.
I feel like there's a lot of interpretations for what this means. Like, it sounds like he could be talking about the dream. He could be talking about, like, the girl and his... I feel like he's talking about his memories, personally. Because his memories is the dream, right?
Yeah.
Because that's all that's left of that. It's just a memory of the dream. And I feel like this is... talking about how, like, he could still just kind of barely see it as attributed to her, but now it's starting to go away. And he's talking about he says, like, the blue world, and it talks about the earth, right? And it's talking about this term.
Yes.
Blue a lot again.
Yes, please.
Which again, the blue is the dream and blah 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 blah. So, like, it's like the world, his world is that dream. It's the blue planet, the blue world, because of the blue dream. And it's all kind of like that was his world, right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's kind of how I view that. All in all, is that it's fading away. He can't reach it anymore. And it was his world.
Yes. Now he must go back from the blue planet to the blue animal. He must go back to the planet Earth, back to reality.
He can't go back to the world when it just left.
Well, that was his world, and I think connecting that to what you just said, I think it's him being pulled back into the world that is not his, but the world that is everyone else's, and he has to go back to that world, because that's...
Yeah, and I think we see kind of like an echo of that in the next song, too, because... You know, that song just starts off with, like, the, you know, line about falling into the blue, so.
I saw an old dream and found it. Oh my god, you're right.
An old dream and found
it. Oh my
interesting.
God,
interesting
right.
Terminology. Okay, so.
Right. Okay, so are we going to the next song then?
The gist of it is, like, you know, that he saw a glimmer of hope, and I think that the clouds rolled back in, and he's like, ah, oh, fuck. Oh, well, there it goes.
Well, okay.
All of the little bottom half of the song is saying it's a lot of terms kind of thrown at you once. It's like hurt, destroy, seek forgiveness, lost, being loved, being betrayed, and chasing solely for the dream. And I feel like those things are deeply connected, right? So, like, be hurt, destroyed. You can seek forgiveness. I feel like these are all essentially the protagonist's kind of views of what love is. Like, I feel like he's posing the question himself of what is love, right?
I actually agree. I think those lyrics very realistically echo what love is.
Yeah. And, like, he says, chase solely for the dream, I think is definitely a very important piece of information. But then he's like, he goes back to hurt, destroy, destroy, being destroyed. So like essentially like getting beaten down to nothing and then clinging on to someone. Right. Which, I mean, this is all very much attributed to the story, like basically throughout its entirety. Like all of this deeply is connected to basically the progression of this character and his love interest. Right. And then it says love and being loved is the last two lines again. And he says, even I had such a mundane freedom. So I feel like that in and of itself is a very, very important revelation and realization that he's hitting at this point, where he's saying, even though everything really sucked, and even though it's gone, and even though I've been saying this entire time that I've never been able to, I was never able to love this person, I was never able to love, I was never able to be loved, he's realizing just now that in all of his pain, that he in fact was loved, and that he loved someone.
Yeah, I think it's really, this is a really good song, despite not having a lot going for it in terms of, like, what's the right way to put it? It's succinct. It definitely gets right to the heart of it and, you know, gives you a really good sense of this character and this progression, and it just sort of wraps everything up without dragging on too long.
It's like, I'm picturing him still on this bench, and he was looking down in that puddle, and he realized that everything went away, and he just kind of looked up, and I'm just seeing him just like, his eyes just prying wide open, and he's like, oh, wow.
Yeah, seriously. That's some good.
It was there all along.
And all he needed was ecstasy to find it.
Which,
Jesus.
This and the final track, actually, there's something I will say this after the podcast because I can't talk about it because it's spoilers for something else, but I very, very closely relate this to another key story that I think people will enjoy. This is very similar to a very specific thing, so we'll... This is some good Maida, basically.
Yeah, seriously.
Any final thoughts on this song? Other than that, it's really good.
I was gonna say it's interesting how Japanese how the destroy be destroyed is koashite and koasarete, and koasarete can mean being destroyed. It can also mean being allowed to destroy. Just something to think about.
Time to move on to Soshite Monogatari ga Owaru.
Thus, yeah. The story concluded.
Oh my gosh, this is such a fun song. Because
holy
shit,
this song.
Oh yeah,
this is the Aozora. This is the Nagisa. This is the.
This song is
far away.
This
super.
Is the song that when you get drunk and you're going and you're doing karaoke, you know, start
you
singing it with
your
everybody
arms around
else.
Your mates, and you start swaying.
Yep, because every karaoke session needs like its awesome rock ballad.
This
to
is
just,
it.
Yeah, this is it. This is the one.
This is Maida. That's what this is right here. Oh, this is a beautiful song. All right, so the music. All I even need to say about the song musically is the freaking solo at the end makes me cry every time.
Yeah,
what
it's
a finale.
It's a really good song. I think the thing that I like about it, and this is just sort of like a general thing about ballads, is that they move back and forth so fluidly between like major and minor modalities, and it really helps to create that sense of, you know, both melancholy and hope, and, you know, I think it just like these songs have such complex emotions because of their willingness to like move between different feelings.
So man, this song. I can't even like really say anything about it musically other than that. I really like this song.
Maida does his magic on this song. And it's very cathartic.
This is easy top 5 Maida songs. Mm-hmm. Like this song is superb.
It falls into the whole quote-unquote key formula where this song is the catharsis, the part where you should tear up and cry.
This is your Haruka Kanata, like this is your Faraway.
Yeah,
this is
exactly.
Like, this feels like insert exactly. song material. Like this is what plays during the scenes, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess let's dig in. So thus the story concluded. Well, that doesn't make any sense because there's another track. Isn't that weird? Anyways, so I'm going to go ahead and just throw it out there that because of the title of this track and what I feel this track is about, I think that this, even though there is another track, as far as this story is concerned with these two characters, I feel like this is the ending.
Yeah, this is the conclusion. The next track is not
about them. It is not related.
I like where you're going, Biz.
Throwing that out there right now. This is the ending of the story.
All right. I agree.
So what happens in this song? Go ahead. Take from the top. Yeah, I'm sure Aspie has a nice, happy interpretation. I'll save mine for last.
This is about reconciliation. About learning to become satisfied with your life despite the pain and hardship you've endured. It feels a lot to me like certain key endings. This is kind of a thing Maeda writes about a lot in his works, about coming to terms with loss and learning to be able to look back with a smile, basically, and not just able to be overwhelmed by all of those sad memories.
What do you think our character is doing? Is he just, you know, is he just still sitting on that bench and thinking?
I'm not sure.
I just had a thought about that. This is a very reflective tone.
Yes.
And I wonder, perhaps he ties the nature of his life purely to his relationship with the girl, but I almost wonder if maybe is he thinking all these things at the end of his life?
Yes.
He doesn't really talk about moving forward in the future here. It's purely about...
This is all past tense.
Right.
Lots and lots of past tense.
And I wonder if maybe that's where this is going, because track 11 has... I mean, track 10, my bad, has some talk about being able to, like, push yourself forward. But here it's all about, I finally realized that I can love and I did love. I didn't think I could before. I didn't think I could approach that emotion, but now I know I was able to.
Now I know.
And that was worth it. And
but when... A lot of questions come to this of, like, when in his life is he having these thoughts? And what do these thoughts mean for him? You know what I mean? Like, what does it mean whenever he's basically saying that he's content, right? So what does that mean?
Well, I think it basically means...
Pepe, what do you think it means?
I think this song can be summed up with the eternal phrase that 'tis better to have loved and lost than to never have loved at all. And I think this is him realizing
certainly.
It. I definitely can't answer your question, Biz, as to when in his life this happens. I guess the lyrics seem to hint that what Danjo said is happening at the end of his life. But I'm not going to push that this is him realizing that and then living on with his life. I'm just hooking onto that message, and I think that knowing that message alone is good enough for us as an audience.
That's definitely the point. Yep, you're right. Totally. Pai, what do you think?
Yeah, the more I listen to it, I definitely get the sense that it's like a end of your life kind of looking back sort of thing. I don't know if you guys have listened or have read the visual novel Narcissu, but
that's such a good comparison, Pie. Wow.
Okay, sorry. So yeah, that's really where I get the sense for this song, is that it's kind of got that sense
you're so
of
correct.
Not just acceptance, but acceptance of death, and you know, recognizing that
shit. Everyone should go read Narcissu, by the way.
Narcissu book club win.
Seriously. But yeah, just kind of like that acceptance of, you know, life ends, And just because, you know, just because you lost something doesn't mean that it wasn't worth having. And even if that means, you know, the end of your life, the end of all of your experiences, being able to look back on it and say, I lived that. That was
yes.
My life.
I think that's Maida.
That's what I get from this song.
I had fun. Anyways.
Go on, Biz.
So, I guess I'll just say it. I think he kills himself.
Oh.
Well, that was
blunt. Jesus Christ, Biz.
I was expecting this. I was waiting for you to drop the bomb ever since we were talking about Corey Duffer. But anyway.
Yeah, I think he kills himself.
But it's so positive. And Tomoyo Afterfields. It couldn't be sad.
Yeah, I think he kills himself.
Why do you say that, Biz?
Why? Yeah.
I think he doesn't have anything else to live for.
Okay.
He's content with his life up to this point. He realizes that he was able to love. It's the only thing he ever wanted to do. He's done it. He just went around. He took his walk. He took the time that he realized when he says, whenever I was talking about how I feel like his memories were growing hazy, I feel like this entire album was talking about, from the first track, he's revisiting these areas where, like, the first, like, I think it's like the first four tracks. Helios made a really good post about what he thinks every, like, how it's basically cut up into arcs, which I think is super, super accurate. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's been basically making his victory lap of life, and he's going around and he's making sure that those memories are still with him. Looking at you, Gramophone. And he's reaffirming those feelings. And now that he knows and he's confident in those feelings, he's able to embrace the end.
Bonecuts just hit this nail on the head in the chat. The second to last stanza definitely supports your theory. The last dream was too radiant, I could only feel it with my hand. I felt it so warm, there is no turning back, no more.
The
no
last
more. It's dream. Over. All of those dreams are there, and nothing else is going to be better.
This is depressing. I wanted my happy ending. Where's the key magic?
Literally the first line where he says he saw the old dream, which is, like I said, he was going around and he was looking at all these things, and then he fell into the blue. Only the water in the sky lasted eternally.
Yep. Thus, why I definitely brought up Narcissu. Like, it's a similar sense of not just suicide, but happy suicide. If that makes sense.
That's a fantastic comparison. Like, I didn't even think of that, but that's super good, and I feel like it's very tonally connected here. But like, yeah, this is dark as shit, but it's honestly, I think it's beautiful. Like, God, just so many, just every line just points to this for me. I'm sorry if you think I'm wrong, but like, in the next scene, I see, I've lived such a painful life, and in the end, I want to love. As long as I have the memory, then everything's good. I hear a gentle voice that isn't human. As he's sinking into the ocean, he hears a voice that isn't human, a voice from beyond the grave, a ghost. Ooh, spooky.
She hears her!
And while
he believes that he can be happy, even in shedding tears and shedding blood. Keyword blood. Even if I've lived such a painful life, in the end I want to love. We were closed inside the eternity that started from that day, the eternity being the love. Whenever that eternity, it's forever. Even though it may have only been a moment in time, that moment in time is there forever because love is eternal and your memories are going to stick with you forever. The memory lives on, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is eternal from that moment that he fell in love with them. Done. Eternal. Dream was radiant, blah, blah, blah. Could only feel it with my hand, felt so warm. There's no turning back. Even if I lived such a painful life, in the end, I was able to love. I have the memories living with you, whom I loved so much I could cry. I loved it. It's over. I loved my life.
I should talk.
A life that is no more. There you go. That's everything about that song.
Okay. Yeah. Again, I don't want to put any assumptions about what actually happened to the character. I'm just hooking out of the message. You could be right.
So I have a question for you.
Right.
So, do you think that this song could have come from a Western culture? Because something I get the sense of is that this is almost this seems like a very Japanese mentality regarding suicide, that you could have such a thing as a happy suicide, not something to regret or, you know, mourn, but to almost celebrate as like, you know, this person found the right moment to end their life where, you know, the story was complete.
I certainly haven't seen Western media look at suicide that way.
Or look at suicide at all.
It's more so in... Well, I don't know.
Well, I have no counter.
I can't answer the question. It's too much for me.
Yeah, it's...
Too philosophical. But I think it, from your interpretation, I think that sounds correct. I would agree to that.
You don't think that Western media could cover that subject?
I wouldn't say that that Western media wouldn't cover the subject. I certainly think that you'll find a lot of emo music and, you know, stuff like that that covers the concept of suicide, but I think
as a matter of fact, I can think of two albums that are concept albums that are very similar to this one that both end in suicide.
Yeah. But I think that the sense that you get from that sort of contemplation is different, where instead of contemplating suicide like in this song where it's like, you know, have I fulfilled my life, is this the moment where I end it, you know, to kind of like not necessarily end on a high note but end on a note of completion, it seems to usually come from I guess more of an aggressive place, like, you know, committing suicide to get back at people or committing suicide to escape, or, you know, it's a different, it holds a different purpose.
It's like suicide is obviously like kind of a almost taboo subject with a lot of people because of religion purposes and this, that and the other thing. I think looking at Maida, I've always considered him not much of a religious man. Rather a man that is appreciative of religion and the idea of religion, but not one that lets it dictate his thought processes, and his definitely not his art, definitely not his art. I mean, hey, look on the other side of the coin though, like this doesn't necessarily have to be that, because I think Dongo mentioned something important about how time is, I mentioned the question of when is this happening. He could have already lived his life and he could just be some old man in a bed and he's falling asleep and going away. Like, that's totally viable. But
I'm starting to see how yours is very plausible in its own right, though.
When I look at something like Gramophone and how the gramophone destroys itself, holding on to the only thing that survives are the memories, and that's what's most important. That's very similar. And I feel like, I don't know, man, it's just a lot of things connect for me. That's just how it goes.
All right. Well, I know that I think we've really gone deep into this song, and I know that I'm going to look at it really differently. But before I go, I'd like to have an opportunity to talk about the last song, because while you don't think that it connects, I really do.
Okay, go ahead. Go.
So
that's right, the guys. There's still another song left.
There's still another song, even though this is the end of the story. There's another song.
So, I think that this song is largely like a sum up of sort of the story. I think that you can kind of see it as a summary from beginning to end, and, you know, goes through everything. But I get the sense that it has a funeral tone to it.
Oh, yes, I agree.
And musically,
it's very dirge.
Yeah.
Very dirgy.
I don't know if I would necessarily say a dirge.
Okay, not like super depressing, but yeah.
Yeah, but you have this sort of synthesized organ going on. And it's reminiscent of a church accompaniment. And actually, there's something very specific about the composition that reminds me of it. I had two friends when I was younger who were very, very good church pianists. And something I picked up from watching them play piano a lot was that the church style of music is very heavily influenced by this this chord inversion thing, where instead of stressing like the fundamentals of a chord and, you know, having like these big movements between like, oh, you know, I'm gonna go from the one to the five to the two, there's a with church music, it's usually small changes in the chords. You know, you'll see going from one chord to another, trying to change as few notes as possible, or to move, you know, directly down one note at a time. And it kind of has this this sense of flow. You know, you don't want to have big, you know, tense moments. You know, you'll hear bum 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 bum, you know, it just always is moving around very slowly. And that's something that I hear from this song. You don't hear in any of the other songs on this album. All the other songs move their chords very quickly. They, you know, stress the fundamental. They don't have this, you know, inversion thing going on. And you also hear this in a few other songs from Maeda when he is trying to get a sense of like a pastoral mood. And then you get the string accompaniment. There's just so much about this song that
this song reminds me of Planetarian a lot.
Yeah. But it's not necessarily a sad thing. This seems almost...
It's peaceful.
Yeah, it's peaceful.
Very peaceful.
Yeah, and maybe funeral is the wrong phrase, but like awake. A happy remembrance.
A goodbye
of,
kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So musically, that's the sense I get from this.
Okay, you tell me all of that, but what do you think about its like continuity? Like, how is it connected to the story, though?
I think that this could be like a sense of the spirit moving on. This is the spirit continuing this song, and it maybe. It's not awake for other people, but it's him.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's, you know, in his own death, looking back and saying goodbye to himself.
Okay. I view the last song as like, obviously it's the title track. It's Love Song. This song, it feels. Maybe it is connected to the story, sure. I feel like it definitely relates to the story.
For the record, I share Pi's belief.
That is a funeral track.
I mean, I agree. Yeah. I think that's a good way to view it, and I think that's cool because that just kinda it doesn't change what I feel about the song lyrically. I feel like the song still fits where it does in my mind, but that is a nice way to make it feel like it does have that continuity. So cool.
See, I think so it's interesting because there's, if you accept that, okay, committed suicide and lost his love and, you know, basically everybody's dead. But then you see phrases like, for the two of us to live is such a hard thing to do. But even now, see, we're living our best. And I think to me, that says that even now is even in death, we live on. And we're still trying our best. We're together in a way, that we can always continuously make each other's long, long dream come true. Now,
totally,
what long, long dream can you think of other than the afterlife? You know.
Well, I you don't exactly use the Japanese verb ikite to like live in death. That's not. I don't. I've never heard it before, so I can't exactly agree. But
at any rate, my view of this song is I feel like it is exceptionally clear lyrically. It is telling you straight up what it wants to tell you.
Yeah.
And for me, I feel as if this is... I listen to this song and I look at these lyrics and I feel like whenever I try to look at it critically, like as a from a writer's purpose perspective, I feel like the writer, Armida, is talking to me. I feel as if when he says we and he says you and I feel like it is the writer and the listener. I feel like this track is talking to everyone who just listened to this album. And it's trying to tell you that even though the story is definitely bleak and it kind of has like a bittersweet kind of niceness to it, I feel as if it is trying to lift the weight of what it just hit you with by something, by trying to tell you that, hey, life isn't, it's not so bad.
Much to my after.
When I was looking at the lyrics, I just kind of like typed down kind of a bunch of things as I was reading it. But essentially the message that sends to me is, for two people to be together is a very difficult thing because love's hard. There's nothing easy about it. It is a very hard thing and it's never going to be so simple. To be reminded of that fact, the fact that love is hard, is self-defeating, and it's an excuse to not love. Okay? So you should love regardless. It's something that you have to agree on mutually with the person that you want to love that, you know, love's not easy, but in the end it's going to be worth it for the two of them. For you and I. To love is to accept the faults and that we all have unconditionally. Like, love is such an integral part of love is being able to accept our faults, because nobody is perfect. We all have faults. There's no way you're going to find that perfect puzzle piece to you. You're always going to have differences, and the most important thing is that you acknowledge those differences and you work together to live with each other, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it more likely that it was basically a sum up of the album's central content, but
and I think
it
still is, but I feel like just because it's connected to that album and that it can be connected to that story, it's also telling you what that story is, like what you should, it's kind of trying to help you to take away like something from that experience. What do you learn from what these characters went through? What do you learn from their thought processes, from their mistakes and from their realizations? It takes that and it poses that question to you while also trying to guide you in a direction and tell you that regardless of what outcome you come to, hey, I love you anyways. You know what I mean? I love you for how you are.
I do like that universal quality for sure. It would also explain some of those. Oh, sorry, I'm cutting you off.
No, it's fine. Like, it specifies about, like, by being able to see this and by doing our best in our life to be with one another, that's what's going to make our long dream come true. So it brings back the dream once again. And it tells you that, look, the dream is a reality. It's not just a dream. And to be able to find that is to find it together. Like, understanding mutually that, you know, love is a difficult thing, but accepting it and not running away from it because of that fact is what's going to help you find the dream. Like, it says, you know, one day you can view it with all futility because one day the world's going to come to an end. Like, everything is going to end one day. It will happen. But until that time comes, you know, sing this song. The song of love to find peace in a cruel world. Because, you know what, it's going to make life worth it. That's the gist of what I think this song is saying. And I feel like that just wraps the whole album up super, super well.
There's all sorts of interpretations you can make of this song, but I think we can all agree on the message. I think that's what's really important here.
Yeah. In terms of continuity,
this could be anything. I think even some people said this might be the girl speaking, which is interesting.
I said that it could be the girl speaking. I also said it could be another girl. I still get that feeling up to now. I still get that feeling that somewhere in this album, despite after losing his first love, there was another girl, either with him or secretly watching him from the background. I don't have enough proof for it. The only proof I have is in Aono Yume and Bokura no Koe, but it's there. I kind of feel it.
You can always look back and listen to it again and try to find something. And like, what's cool about this song is because it kind of adds that layer of, you know, love is endlessly complex. It makes all of the hardships and how rough everything was for this protagonist really just not so bad. It really lightens the mood so substantially that, like, even though this song, like, this album, so many songs just feel so sad and so heavy that, you know what, hey, that's just a part of it, you know what I mean? That's like, that's a part of love. It's super, super Maida feels, and I think it's awesome. It's really good. I love this ending track, lyrically. And even though, you know, it has the whole organ thing, there's also a really sweet little kind of peppering of a violin in there too, that's actually quite nice. I really like that towards the second half of the track. It's like an organ is something that's like kind of, it has a lot of presence and like it's very deep, but that violin it makes it lighter. Like it just adds like a nice, it makes you feel good. It's cathartic, you know? I really like it.
Now we need to talk about what we're going to do for the end of the podcast. Wow. Are we just going to leave it here, or do you want to talk more about the album as a whole?
Well, I think Biz already...
Biz, did you have anything else to say, or...?
I don't have anything else to say. We can just kind of... If everyone wants to say how they feel about the album, then...
Yeah. We never really talked about the illustrations, but...
We did, well, for the most part.
Oh, I shouldn't...
Or do you mean the main
there was something I wanted to say about the illustrations.
The one on the rooftop, was it?
I did want to say something about those illustrations, actually. I know that there was a lot of talk, just something interesting to talk about in regards to, like, the illustrations that come with the album and how, like, they're definitely not... There are ways that you can draw comparisons to them, but a lot of the times the characters don't look like the same characters. Like, it doesn't exactly look that way sometimes. I feel like, one, it could totally just be, like, an artist disconnect, where, like, the illustrations, like, we're just, oh, hey, I want you to draw a boy and a girl, right? the artist is like, yeah, okay. With the exception of the fact that, well, clearly there are repeating characters, in some songs. So, you know, there's the question of, is this actually a story? Because... Reminder, artistic interpretation, all of us could be freaking totally wrong. Like, it could totally just not be one story. And maybe it is multiple stories. Yeah, maybe it is that. And could totally be correct. I can't say otherwise. I don't know. But I think what's interesting about posing that question is that it could be. And it would still provide the same message. And so,
I think that's
while you could provide the fact that these illustrations are showing characters that don't look the same as evidence that it's about different people, at the same time, you could look at this story and apply it to anyone, I think.
Exactly. This is a story that so many people have gone
through. I feel like it covers both bases of, it could be a story about these two characters, or it could be about different characters, but you know what? Frankly, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And I think that's super important, because you can apply it to anyone, because you know what, what's the word I'm looking for, love doesn't care. It doesn't care who the two people are. It's still going to be in existence. It's not going to cherry pick. So, you know, I just important to bring up, and I think that's a cool thing to look at. Do you guys think that you like this album more now than you did when you first started?
This is my first time listening to it.
I have
no comparison.
Yeah. I know it's a lot
nice
of people
to be able
like
to sit down and think about the album for once.
A lot of people listen to like a song or two off of this album, and like a lot of times people are always telling me, like, oh, I don't really listen to it, but I had to, you know, listen to it in its entirety so many times. I was just like, but the album is so good. That I feel I'm very happy that, people have listened to it now and are like, wow, this is a good album.
Just now we just received some fan art from Cheska depicting her own interpretation of Love Song. Apparently this was more of a stream of consciousness painting, and she just had a vague idea in her head and put it to paper. But yeah, I guess like you can see the girl there reaching for a blue dream. I know there's plenty you can offer up about this. I think she mentions that after she finished drawing it, she felt like she was unconsciously channeling the 13th song all along. So that's really interesting. So thank you so much, Cheska, for your awesome fan art throughout this book club. Moving into Oraino Hoshi, there'll probably be a bit more stuff coming in from different people, I hope. But yeah, thank you so much for your contributions for this love song. It's been awesome. I guess I have one more question for you, Biz. Do you feel this is at all connected to Oraino Hoshi?
I feel as if it could be, but I don't think that there are any actual direct comparisons.
Okay.
I would... You could take this album, I feel, and you could put it in that same world as Oraino Hoshi, and it would fit. Because this is a very real album. It doesn't feel like it oversteps any boundaries of reality or, you know, human conscience or anything. So I feel like it could totally fit in just fine. Whether all the love song albums are going to be like a literal trilogy, I mean, it's fun to talk about, but I don't actually think that. But it could. It absolutely could. And I feel like looking at, you know, the 12th track, how they say, like, you know, the world is going to end, and then you have the stuff that's happening in Oraino Hoshi when we get to it. That, sure, it could totally work.
So yeah, I guess like transitioning to Oraino Hoshi next week, it's going to be quite erratic.
Quite a change, yeah. It's a very different
album. Experience.
Very different album. That I think is going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully people... I think it will definitely... It will be... I will say it will be more fun.
It's definitely going to be more of a fun sort of experience.
This album likes to make me pick my brain, whereas Oraino Hoshi is just, even though you can definitely pull a lot of things from it, it is just on its own something that is quite a treat to listen to, and it's a lot of fun.
You're comparing Air to Rewrite, basically.
Sure.
I hope you guys are looking forward to that. I definitely am. Oraino Hoshi in a Love Song it's had a lot of passionate fans for quite a long time now, especially because of those YouTube animations that are quite popular. Shame Love Song 1 didn't get anything like that.
It got nice drawings, at least.
I really hope that you guys have taken this time to give Love Song, the original Love Song, a chance and see what it has to offer, and I really sincerely hope that many people who participate in this book club got a new appreciation for this album, because it is top Maeda stuff. It really is. I don't have a lot else to say other than thanks, guys, and I look forward to seeing you all again next week for the Oraino Hoshi no Love Song segment of this book club. Woo-hoo. Take care, guys. I love you all.
Love you all.
Aishita. Hi.